Was there any, in terms of the home visits you would do or the interviewing of the women, did you use a schedule that was prepared by the researcher in the bureau, or would you each have your
own? Well, yes, it was always prepared before we went out. Mm-hmm. But, for instance, the field people, when you were taking party out, you would work with the statistical division or any other division in working up your schedule. So hoping that you get some material that they could tabulate and use, you know.
But you would work up your own schedule?
Oh, yes, we worked up our own schedules. And I finally were approved by Miss Anderson, and then later they had to be approved, and when the setup got more complicated, by the Bureau of the Budget and so on. And we had some long schedules, which I usually opposed, because I felt when you were interviewing working women, you want to have a very short schedule, probably not more than a half a dozen items, and never more than 10. Well, there was a difference of opinion. Some of the people in the office, that sat at a desk, thought you could ask 50 questions. Well, by that time, you'd worn out everybody, and you weren't getting very good information. You had to boil down and try to get what you wanted, not so much.
Let me go back to the study on the labor legislation in various states. You mentioned earlier that that came out of the disagreements with the National...
Oh, no. We made studies. There was the one study. Is that... did you get a copy of that? It was finally written up in 28. Protective legislation. It came out in various sections. Mary Winslow wrote most of it. I think I wrote some. I forgot now what I wrote on, but I wrote one part of it. Again, things would be farmed out to people to write if you could write a sentence and put a period away. You were asked to write, so...
But this was basically the attempt by the Bureau to kind of bolster their position on...
No, it wasn't. It was a chance. It gave the Women's Party a chance to produce any cases that they had. They were asked to send us all any instances they knew where women were being discriminated against, industries where they were discriminated against. They came up with very little. I was in California then, too, because I'd been there. And one of the funny things was along the, you know, you had the old commuter trains out from Berkeley that went out in those days. They closed down the stations, and the Women's Party said, what the Women's Party said was that the women were taken out of those stations because they couldn't work the long hours, that the railroad wanted somebody that could work a 12-hour shift. And California had an 8-hour law. Well, I changed the Southern, I think the Southern Pacific, it was this interurban service. Poor old stations had closed down altogether because more and more cars were being used, and there was less and less business, and no men had been hired to replace them. Maybe they'd, maybe one or two to like temporarily close, but it was just the changing trend of the times. The stations had gone out of business. There weren't any jobs. They closed out the jobs. It wasn't the fact that they couldn't work 12 hours. The stations were still, going to be abolished because they weren't there wasn't enough patronage to sell tickets. People bought tickets in Oakland or San Francisco that were 20 ride or 30 ride. They didn't buy tickets, and there wasn't freight wasn't being delivered. So those were all closed. The ticket sellers. Well, they made.
In other words, they would present a case they claimed indicated discrimination using.
And we'd run it down as far as we could. Yeah, both sides. Yes, as much as we could. And then they pointed out, I think, with Chronicle, that there weren't any men, very few women linotype operators. If you know the old linotype operator, they worked with molten lead. It's all that. Well, there was a thing of working around the shifts, but the Labor Department said they had never gone in and dragged any woman off the night shift. But women didn't want to be linotype operators. It was a hot, heavy job. They had to lift the lead, and those days they weren't as... So nobody knew why. There had been a few linotype operators, and the personnel people looked up. Why, no, they hadn't fired them. They just sort of disappeared. They probably wouldn't hire any because there were very few women wanted to be linotype operators. They didn't have toilets. They didn't have restrooms for them. The group was so small. I mean, the things that they pointed out, many of us, well, they had a woman, do you remember right back at the St. Francis Hotel at that time? There was either a French-Italian restaurant, and she was... active member of the Women's Party, so I called her and said I'd like to come over and talk to her about her employees and so on. She had all men waiters and waitresses. The Women's Party sent in a statement that her waiters that the reason she had men was because of the hour law. Well, she only served lunch and dinner, and she was only open for a short time at lunch. Then she opened, I guess, closed entirely in the afternoon. She was so amazing. She said, no, nobody worked 8 hours. And she just couldn't, unless it was a party or some very unusual thing. Did the women's party want her to put women on? Well, you see, her husband had started this restaurant, and the kind of service they had, you had men in black, and white women in white shirts and black, and they had hours rather armed service because it never meant anyone like me before. Why, women wouldn't be capable of the, bringing things on their arm. And also most of these waiters, it was a French. I think they had a French and Italian cuisine. Spoke some French. She got plenty of Frenchmen. Oh, dear, no, she was awfully upset. If the women's party wanted, she just couldn't go along with them. She couldn't employ women as waitresses. I think she had a couple salad girls out in the kitchen, probably a cashier or so on, but it wasn't a question. They said, you see, anything they found that they thought was discrimination, they blamed it. In those days, it was primarily the hour law, more than to the wage, and that they couldn't work in this restaurant because, after all, she worked them. They had an overall, well, women oftentimes did have an overall of 12 hours anyway, because they worked the lunch shift, have 4 hours off, and go back in the evening, and very often that wasn't covered. You see that?
Now, was California, were there so many examples?
Well, we went to California because, you see, they had an eight-hour law, and they had a minimum wage, so it was a good state for the women's party to pick on. Mm-hmm. Indiana didn't have a thing, so you couldn't blame anything in Indiana under the labor legislation. A lot of states had little or no enforcement in the South, so you couldn't blame that, too. We did some, but California had all these laws, so it was an especially good state to go into.
Now, when did this start soliciting from them? Was this right after the conference?
This was after the conference. They wanted an investigation.
What had been presented at the conference?
Yes, and every place that I went, I chased the women's party, any representatives they had, begged them to produce their cases. If they wanted to, they could go along with me on the interviews and so on, but I can't remember anyone ever going along wanting to.
Oh, so you would actually, when you were in an area, contact them and ask them?
Oh, surely, yes,
They've been asked. Oh, so the Bureau was real. See, none of this shows up in the record.
We were bending over backwards to get. Uh-huh. At least I was. I don't know, and I'm sure the others were doing the same thing.
Oh, because none of this shows up in whatever existing records are, because that's what I've always been convinced that a lot was going on around that. After that conference, and I just haven't been able to.
Oh, yes, we asked the women's party, was supposed to give us names wherever, in any areas we were going into, of the members who would be concerned and who would have any leads for us. And I always chased them down, at least. And I can't say I got very many leads. It was an easy thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. But when it came to specifics, there wasn't much.
Now, what would happen then after you would investigate? Would you then send a report back to the women's party about your findings? What would be the next step?
Well, our reports, of course, went back to the Bureau, and then when the final findings of the survey, we never turned over any information. We got it as confidential from a worker or an employer. We might have interviewed the sort of thing you'd do on that study. Wouldn't have made so much difference. If somebody was out of work, we both could have gone. I could have taken the women's party person along if the person didn't have a job. But I wouldn't have gone into a plant with somebody from the outside.
Mm-hmm. But then once this was sort of answered case by case, was there just did Miss Anderson then deal with the party and communicate back to them that
I think so.
They found nothing?
We found a little now and then, but very little, don't you?
Did that then end any further relationship between the party and the Bureau?
Well, see, I was in the field. I think they sort of lost interest for a while, and then it wasn't revived until after the Second World War, very much. There was a long lull in then, but I don't think much happened. Have you found anything? It was quite dormant for many years.
Yeah, and it wasn't until, of course, 43, I think, when the business and professional women and those groups
people got into this. They came in later, yes.
But it seemed like there
was a dormant period from the late 20s until the 40s.
Right.
We never heard of them. I can't remember anyone ever.
Because Mary Hilton was telling me that the very first time anyone from the Bureau anyone from the party came to any women's Bureau function since those early days, apparently, was at the 50th anniversary. They did come.
Yeah, you see, that was a long... that was in 59,
yeah.
But, or no, 69, 70.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we didn't see much of them in all that period. Yeah.
So it was just immediately after, right around the time that the initial fight over the ERA began.
Yes, I think they'd bring up the... I don't know, I think every once in a while there was an equal rights law proposed in Congress, but it was sort of very lukewarm, and I don't think it ever got beyond committee, if it ever even got to the committee, did it?
Now, I understand there have been discussions initially in between 23 and 25 of the Women's Joint Congressional Committee with the Women's Party, trying to get them to change the wording so it would still incorporate the protected legislation.
For women,
and then
yes.
They supposedly considered it for a while and then ultimately decided against it. Do you recall any of those?
Oh, I wouldn't. See, I was out on other things at that time. You know, field agents, you came in and stayed a few weeks or a few months if you were writing something up, and then you were off again on something else.
To what extent was there links between the Bureau and the other the women who were in Washington all the time and the other women's organizations that were still going on, like at that point it would have been the League of Women Voters and some of the social reform women's groups that had survived through the 20s?
Well, did we meet them as representatives of the Women's Bureau? No, I wouldn't say not the field people. But you might know them socially, don't you? And mingle with them, because I think with like interests, you tend to gravitate to people who have some of the interests that you do. So that way, you would, I think socially, we saw people from the Women's Trade Union League.
Well, there was a lot of social contact.
Yes, because it seemed to me you were seeing the same old group. You'd go to a lunch that was for something, and you'd go to the same benefit lunches. They weren't benefit lunches. And speakers and so on, you'd meet in that way, but not officially.
And how about at more than these more formal functions, say socially as friends? Was there a lot of overlap?
Oh, yes, I think so.
I mean, for instance, in terms of your own circle of friends, did many of them come from these kinds of groups?
Well, when you're a field agent, your circle of friends is quite quite limited. And they tended to be Women's Bureau people, and turn people they knew that you'd get together with.
Oh.
I remember there was a dill pickle club here that quite a few people in the Bureau got interested in, had a rented quarters not far from here. Well, they were all liberals. A young Catholic priest was probably one of the most active in it. Estelle Frankfurt, who was in the Bureau, our assistant director, and I think Miss Anderson, a lot of people belonged. It was a lot of people, they didn't know just what, they were just liberals, that was all. They were do-gooders, they didn't know what, but they were interested in any cause that came up that affected, and they had a little place over here where they met. You could get lunch.
Did most of the women in the Bureau seem to, were their friends drawn from the other women who worked in the Bureau for the most part?
Well, of course, it depended where your home was. You know, in the civil service, you get them from all over, so just of necessity, unless you had church ties or so on, and the field agents were a little different than the, they didn't have any place. We had a trunk. I always remember a little daughter of a friend of mine in St. Louis. She spent a Saturday with me, and she decided she'd like to stay. And I said, well, Mary Jean, I'll be working on Monday. We've gone out. She'd had a good time. I'd let her play in the bathtub. And I said, you wouldn't like it here. I don't have a kitchen. Oh, Siobhan, you don't have a kitchen. Well, then she began, you know, just went through the whole gamut of, did I have a sewing machine? Did I have a car? Did I have a daddy? Did I have, I think down to probably a pair of scissors, what do you think? Well, finally she said, what do you have? And we were carrying trunks down. I said, oh, I have a trunk that I keep my things in. She said, what's that? And I said, well, look over there. It was a wardrobe. Oh, she said, a box. And the next morning her mother called up. She said, well, I never knew you were a sadist. And I said, well, we had an awfully good time yesterday. Everything was lovely and sweet. Well, she said, I thought it was when she picked her up. She still had prayers. She was a very good Catholic. She said, Mary Jean just practically went into hysterics in her prayers last night because you didn't have a thing. She said, oh, God, she hasn't got anything but a box.
So you led a highly transient life.
Yes, so I guess that was, if you had friends in the community, you met some people.
Mm-hmm.
I made some friends over the years. Some that I still hear from, but that was where you went back. Huh?
Well, on the average, how long would you spend in Washington in the course of the year?
Well, that varied, too. It just depended on what the demands were and what you were doing. Sometimes I had to come back and work on things after I got back, or at least write them up roughly, then I'd be back for several months.
But you would maintain an apartment the whole time in the Washington
area?
No,
I didn't. I just stayed with friends. In fact, I stayed with Mary Elizabeth for many years, off and on, as it came in.
Now, she never worked in the field, though. She was always
No, she was a researcher, yes. And I have friends here who are still friends. They had a house, and I had a key, so I usually let them know before I got here, but if I didn't, I had a key to the front door, and there was an extra, always a room that was mine if I...
Oh, now, was this the practice of any of the field workers?
No, I don't think they all did. I think I was luckier in that way than some, that I always did have a place to get into if I came, but I had just happened to meet this family when I first came through other friends, and she just insisted on giving me a key. And
now, and, well, for how many years was that until you actually...
Oh, I was in the field, I suppose, for 25 years.
So it was into the 50s by the time you...
Before I had an apartment. Yes. Because I was gone out more than I was in. Usually, not always.
Did some of the other women who were field workers do like you did with Mary Elizabeth, where they would share an apartment with someone else from the Bureau?
Yes, off and on, I think that happened. But now I don't know very much. There were some. There were, you see, more, I think, now. There was the old Allies Inn. There's a bank building there now that you could get rooms. Miss Anderson lived there for many years, had an apartment, and they took us in. There were more places around.
Oh, I see.
There was a very good place over here on N Street that had rooms and dinners and so on.
Uh-huh.
And there were a good many. And,
the residential facilities.
Sort of, more or less residential hotels. There are fewer of them now than there were then.
That was a pattern for a lot of professional women at that period, wasn't it?
Yes, I think that was more generally true. It's not now that they don't exist.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they made friends, and some of them lived in Baltimore, and some in New York, some in Philadelphia. They'd go home weekends and stayed wherever they could get a place. There were quite a few places in those days that you could get a room for on a weekly rate if you wanted to. I just happened to have these friends, and I spent...
Most of the women who stayed in the Bureau for a long period of time basically all single?
Yes. We didn't have... I don't think we ever had any... Let's see, did we ever have any married women that were really... I mean, not widows or not separated or something working in the field? No, I don't... They in the Bureau, yes. But not in the field.
Mm-hmm.
It was too uncertain a life.
Mm. But the ones who worked...
You might go out for 2 months and find out you were out for 6 months. I left here 1 year in February, and then came back in November, and I'd take the suitcase that time. But I got sent out from one place to the other, so you just... We were a small organization. We were just pushed around Miss Anderson wanted us to go, or where there was a sudden demand.
Were most of the studies initiated by her in terms of the particular things that would be studied, or would they come from people like Mary Elizabeth and the researchers?
No, many of our studies were requests early in the early days. States wanted what we call state surveys, of employment of women. I suppose, I don't know, I haven't any idea, but I have a feeling we probably get a goodly proportion of the states that were just a routine state survey where you went in and try to get a sample of the industries women were in, wages and hours, working condition. Then some group interested in a health problem, the study of lead poisoning. I didn't work very long on that. I think Dr. Alice Hamilton was very interested in that. That was a request. Social workers wanted a request. I think we got a request for conditions in meatpacking. We were on the meatpacking study more than a year. Then I worked all the meatpacking plants in the country, and not all of them, but a good sampling of them, and things like that. Then, I don't know, some women's group, business professional women, wanted a study of women's mobility towards upward position. Mm-hmm. No, not too many. Some of the surveys began in the requests in the Bureau, but a lot of them came in those days from requests outside. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were so many requests that Miss Anderson couldn't answer all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, couldn't send out people. There weren't enough people to send out.
When something came in, for instance, from...
Of course, there weren't as many people running around gathering information in those days.
Of course, I don't know. They don't seem to have too big a staff now, either.
Well, I don't think they've done any grassroots. Yeah. They haven't done any grassroots research for a long time. We were one of the few. I've got to go to the bathroom. I'll tea. Would you like to go?
No. Oh, when you would be out in
the zoo? Well, depending on your interest.
Uh-huh. It sounds like it was... relatively isolated.
Very much so.
Like
I said, I I've spent so much of my life in hotel bedrooms reading with a bed light and working.
Did you learn to carry an extra light bulb with you?
Oh, yes. Oh, you bought one after you got to town.
Oh, because I've started doing that now when I travel, because you never get enough light.
Light, no, we have 100 bulbs, but usually just left it because it was too much distance to take on unless you were just going to be there for a few nights. And
do you think that there was a general feeling in the Bureau that you really shouldn't make contact with the community groups so that you could stay in?
No, you just didn't have time.
Mm.
You see, after all, you don't make contacts with groups if you're someplace for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Unless if you have friends, you meet people through them. But you didn't you didn't have time to go in the daytime looking for groups to go. And by night, you're retired. And weekends, you look for a movie or a theater or what was going on. And if you liked the zoo, you maybe went to the zoo if it was a nice afternoon.
Did you feel comfortable in those days going to restaurants alone for dinner in the evening?
It never bothered me.
Because that's one of the things that many of the women talk about in the 20s, well, more so in the 10s, but also in the 20s, was the difficulty of the life of the single professional woman in terms of housing and going to restaurants alone.
Well, I don't think I ever aspired to the ones where they probably, there's still a restaurant that would probably look askance if you came in just a lone woman.
Mm.
They just wouldn't have space for you. That, of course, they don't want to give a lone woman, I suppose an old one they would, but unless they don't want to give a table to a man, probably will be joined by somebody, but if a woman's going to be joined by somebody, it isn't, if she's young, that. So that sort of thing, we could always go down the hotel dining room if we were staying in a hotel, and maybe we didn't aim at the very fanciest restaurants. We tried to get, respectable food, good food, but I can't ever remember having any feeling. You might feel lonely if it was a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am, sitting all alone. But not too, I never felt too bad for myself, I think.
Because you were so mobile, did that mean that you weren't a member of various organizations that would allow you to have those sorts of connections in other cities?
Well, you couldn't, because there weren't too many that you could belong to. YW existed everywhere, but after all, that was primarily for the working girl.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knew somebody on the staff from somewhere else, you might go in and chat with them, but there weren't too many women's organizations. There were a few women's cities clubs. One or two, I think Mrs. Best was a member of the women. I think there was I believe it's gone now. There were a chain out there. There was a very nice women's city club in San Francisco on Post Street. I stayed there one time when it was brand new. It was so new that I think the first night I was a new person in the bed, and the bed collapsed. And I was had been installed. It was very, very attractive. I'm sure it's been gone a long time.
No, I think that there's.
Oh,
I think there is. I think it's been made into some sort of, been retained as a residential hotel for women who travel. I'm not sure. I know it's
well, it was primarily a social club in those days. They just had a few guest rooms, but we were able to get a couple of them, maybe two or three of us there, and they let us stay. Well, one of our members was a member of the national chain of women's city clubs. Apparently there was some relationship between the various clubs. I know there was one in both. There was one in Boston, there was one here, there was one in Chicago, there was one in San Francisco. Those are the ones I sort of remember that sometime or other. I believe there was one in Providence for a while. And one of our women was a member, and she would ride ahead, and sometimes we could stay up.
Oh, so this then kind of created a whole...
Well, it wasn't enough, It was so occasional. If you came in for overnight, you didn't do that sort of thing. Now you. And during the war, you were just thankful if you could find a place to sleep and not sleep in the lobby all night.
Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I think is of interest to a lot of women researchers now is the whole question of the women's networks in those days, where there did seem to be very strong ties among women in different parts of the country, and a working woman might go into another city and be able to make contacts and fit in with another group of women.
If she belonged, I suppose, to the Amalgamated, or she belonged to one of the other textile unions, or to the very few women belonged to the machinists. There weren't too many. Some women belonged to the binding workers. They might have some contacts, but not too many.
Yeah.
And the Women's Trade Union League, it wasn't all over the country. There were offices in Chicago, New York, Washington. I don't think California had any, either Los Angeles or San Francisco had any rooms, trade union leagues. I think at one time Minneapolis may have had a small one, but it was gone before. So, and of course, as you tramped around, you got to know people in the state labor organization, and some of them became your friends. And even though you weren't seeing them, you checked in with them when you landed in the town. And,
so in a way, the whole situation was much, much harder by virtue of the fact that you really did have to remain somewhat aloof and impartial.
Oh, yes, we tried at least. Yeah. And you couldn't, you didn't talk about what you, oh, you could talk about what you were doing, but of course, your information went. We were really, I think, quite careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that what, we kept our,
how frequently in the field studies did you do interviewing as well? Were those only for the really major studies that you would do, the visiting and the interviews? Was most of it gathering?
Most of it was gathering. For instance, the large cannery survey, which was at the time when the wage and hour law was going into effect, and it was to find out how it was going to be applied or get some basic information for applying it to canneries over the years. So we audited payrolls for an entire year in hours of work, which was there's a big dried fruit plant in California that much larger than the Sunkist and so on. They do much of the dried fruit. I don't know, I was there for a long, long time, and we were so anxious to get out that I had a young man who had his PhD who was working. He was very fast, and I was trying to be fast in those days. And the manager came over while they were going to have the auditors. He said we could have the space all to ourselves if we for that week, but inside the next week they didn't know where they'd put us, or maybe we'd have to come back. So Stu and I went like mad, and he said, you know, there's a pool on. I said, on what? He said, when you people are going to finish. There are all sorts of bets out. Everybody's concerned. And he said, we've come over to offer you both a job whenever you want one. Well, we just tore. Well, he had said that we couldn't do it unless, because he was very cooperative. He had no objections. He knew the such. He said, well, I can't see how I could do it unless 10 days or 2 weeks at the most. We finished in the end of 4 days. Well, we just torn, you know, just because I'd see him flip a page, I'd flip a page. And I finally said to him, well, I'm afraid of our accuracy. And he said, no, I'm not. And I said, why not? He said, the space we're working, we can't be inaccurate. We haven't got time to work at it. We're just dashing down the page. And surprisingly, we did a little spot check, and we weren't very accurate, maybe. Something, at least our figures you could read if you couldn't read something else.
Did you, in those situations, usually have someone with you to spot check when you were doing a lot of copying?
No. You check, you couldn't, that was much too expensive.
Yeah.
You did checking yourself, and you got so you could copy fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't, the office could usually discover it. And if we had
do you
look
think
what
the Xerox machine could have done for you in those days? Do you think it would not have helped?
No, I don't see how you could copy with it. Oh, you mean just, I doubt if the employers would have allowed us to copy a whole sheet. I would have been just, and then the office would have had to copy into some form too, but you see, men and women would be mixed.
Oh, I see.
And if we were only doing women, we'd have to sort them out and find out which were the women. And that was, sometime we did both. For instance, the cannery survey, that was a basic survey for the canning industry, so we covered both men and women.
And would you do tabulations as you were copying, or were you just straight copying?
No,
to
just straight copy and get it into form. So it could be tabulated when it got to Washington. We
and
just registered it in.
I see. And the tabulation was usually done in Washington?
Oh, all done in Washington. Lord,
and
we didn't have, we couldn't be spending our time tabulating. Oh, we might occasionally do a spot thing just to get some idea of how things were running,
uh-huh.
But that was just for your own satisfaction.
And what role would the field workers play in the writing of the reports?
When?
What role did they play in the actual writing then?
Well, it depended on whether they liked to write. You know, most people don't like to write. I'm sure you know that. And a lot of people can't write or just can't organize material. So some people wrote, but not too many, I think. Probably I wrote as much as any of the field agents. I can't say I liked it, but unfortunately, early in the beginning, somebody thought I knew how to write. And so I got involved in occasionally writing reports.
But there wasn't a clear demarcation between the people who were the researchers and did the writing and those who were the field workers?
No, the writers were usually in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And where the field workers worked with them, tried to explain why some of the material shouldn't be used as they were using it. Because, you know, sometimes just looking at cold facts, I have, the things you can play down or play up, if you know them, they're still facts, but yeah. They're not as unusual as they sometimes strike somebody who's writing a report. That is quite unusual.
What were the most important studies that you were involved in with the Bureau?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if they ever thought of them in terms of importance.
I mean, looking back in terms of the potential impact that they would have on women workers.
Well, of course, we never knew what impact anything has. Don't you think isn't something almost in the air? There was a growing interest. Maybe it was a little impact from this, a little impact from that.
Mm.
But you had no way of measuring what impact the thing had. There might be more interest in certain studies on the part of readers. I don't think people have ever liked to read too well. They don't yet.
Did you see any change in the activities of the Bureau, say from when you first joined in 24 to up to the Second World War?
Oh, well, of course, our emphasis was entirely different by that time. We'd gotten away from the state surveys. We weren't doing as much field research. I don't think there was a request. The women's organizations were no longer asking for surveys the way they had in the earlier days. And I don't think things were as pinpointed. There were so many more things. Our interests were spread so much wider.
Interesting, because in other words, what happened is, as the women's organizations became dormant, the Bureau was used much less as kind of an arm of those organizations.
Yes.
So that it would then, how would it then initiate studies, for instance, in the 30s? I didn't notice a lot of material
in the 30s?
I didn't notice a lot, for instance, on the effect of the depression and welfare measures on women.
Oh, yes, we were out on that. I used to come back and talk about the loose women, and somebody said, for pity's sake, be careful, but Miss Anderson's going to have to go and make a speech, talk about the loose women, because I meant the women who were adrift. And it was a silly phrase, and I'd say, well, what are you doing with my loose women today? And they were the women who had, that weren't as eligible for, both the men and women who were adrift had problems, and of course a lot of unemployment, and they weren't getting welfare. We rounded quite a bit in that area. That probably wasn't printed as much. It was fed back to communities for use by the organizations. Just the findings, not the names, but what we found. I remember, now I'm just wasting your time, but so often a human interest story comes back. I went and did a call on a poor woman who'd lost her job in Philadelphia. And she was older, and she hadn't. And so very near, a brash landlady said, what do you want to see her for? Are you from the welfare? I said, no, I'm not from the welfare. Well, she's got arthritis, and she's a bit lame today. Who should I tell her is here? And I said, oh, just tell her a friend. And so I went up and I explained to her that, as I was leaving, she told me her sad story. And I said, something is bothering you, don't come down. She said, I want it, it's the last thing I do. You're the first person who's come and said she was a friend. And I want the landlady to think I've got a friend. Oh, yeah, that was a loneliness. She didn't have any relatives. She was alone. Job had disappeared. So you got some of that, but that was just...
Was this during the Depression years?
Yes, during the Depression.
Well, by the time of the, say, from 33 to 38, was there much less field work done in that period too, during the Depression
no,
years?
No, I think we were busy all the time. We were always on state surveys, if nothing else, don't you? The states were writing in requests. One of the first studies in women's employment in offices and clerical work. That was made in the 30s. I worked on that at the home. I was back in the office and worked on that for quite a while, helping with the tabulations and the preliminary analysis on the material, because, as I say, sometimes you have to look at facts in terms of their relation to the whole, don't you know? Just when something comes out. If you change your sample, why, it's very sad.
Well, am I right then in interpreting that in the 20s, when you still had enough of the women's groups around, especially the working women's organizations that were still strong, so much of the work of the Bureau was coming from their input, at least?
Well,
but then as you move into
the Bureau, it was new, after all. Anything that's new, there's a certain interest, and the states found out they could ask for the states were setting up labor departments with women in charge of women and children, mm-hmm. not too many, and they wanted help. So we were constantly, then a new industry. I remember when, you know, the beauty shops didn't get too important until in the 30s. And Miss Anderson came in one day and she said, well, you know, this beauty business, she said, we're getting reports that women are being poisoned by some of the things they were using for the permanent waves and so on. And she said, we don't know anything about the wages. They're not under any regulations at present. We don't know anything about the hours. And she said, I guess we'll have to go out and make a study of the time at the beauty shops. I said, oh, Lord, wouldn't that be awful? I don't think there's anything worse. And I said, just a disorganized industry. She was there. About an hour, I had a call. The secretary said, Miss Anderson, I'd like to see you. Well, she said, when will you be ready to go out on study of beauty shops? I said, oh. She said, well, you'll just have to follow your nose. Nobody knows anything about it. You couldn't get a sample. There was no a census sample. You couldn't get the sample. You just went out and started visiting beauty shops. Some of them had payrolls. They paid the girls every day. It was before the wage. Now, that was in the 30s. They paid them at the end of the day. Some of them were paid on commissions. Some paid rent for their booths. It was almost any practice held.
So you basically, in that case, would go and interview the owners of the shops?
Also, we would interview the workers. Some of them we try to interview, get their names, and visit some at home or visit them on the job if they were sitting around. I had a girl with me who had quite a bit of experience, probably not so much academic background, but she had very good common sense. And she and I struggled for quite a while, and we picked up Miss Anderson sent us out somebody else to work with us after we got. Miss Anderson said, "What do you want?" I said, "Oh, Lord, to start out with, I think two of us will be enough because we won't know where we're going or what we're doing, and we just have to more or less consult every night to decide where we're going."
How many did you finally cover?
Oh, we covered a lot of them. I think maybe hundreds and hundreds.
In just one city?
Oh, no. We did beauty shops in Philadelphia. I think we did beauty shops in Chicago. We did beauty parks in Columbus, Ohio. We did beauty shops somewhere. I don't think we got as far as the West Coast.
In
New Orleans, we did beauty shops.
That was
I think so. I mean, somebody in New Orleans heard they had problems. I know I spent a lot of time running down a girl who was supposed to have one of the permanent wave fluids was supposed to have just wrecked her skin. Well, the truth was, when I ran her down to her doctor, she'd already had a venereal disease. And of course, it was a combination. Maybe the whatever the permanent was in those days irritated the lesions that were already there, but I really ran myself ragged trying to run that down.
You basically would just go from shop to shop. You didn't have any leads as to where there might be problems.
Oh, when you took the telephone directory, they were in the telephone directory, even those. But I mean, you couldn't say we covered this percentage of shops because there was no universe to select from other than you tried to select from the telephone directory. And if there was a board of cosmetology, you went to them and got what you could. And their regulations were usually in terms of the customer. I remember talking to the girls, and they'd tell me what happened to the customers. And I used to look at that. If you can do anything you please to the customer, I'm not interested in what happens to the customer. What happened to you? Well, it turned out most of the things, they slipped in soapy water.
Oh.
Good many of them, you know, fractured knees and legs and occasionally broke because they went sliding rather than from the summer. It depended on their sensitivity to things. Some still wear rubber gloves when they do things. Mm-hmm. Others don't.
Did they seem willing to talk, or were they fearful since they were...
No, I remember the beauty shop, people were rather willing to talk. They were meeting, you see, they were meeting customers on a sort of a talkative basis. They were about the easiest ones to talk to.
Was it unusual, was this kind of study, like the beauty shop one, unusual in the sense of being so vague and undefined that you just sort of had to go out and search what was happening?
Well, occasionally for women's studies you did. And when there was we made a part-time study, and the quest after that was after the war.
Yeah, I think part of the war stuff, I think I noticed
that. There was a good deal of interest in women's groups, and what were the part-time opportunities? Well, again, you had very little universe. We knew from running around that probably we knew there were part-time people in the department stores. We knew there were part-time people in the restaurants, but we didn't know a lot about other part-time. We knew an organized industry, but we didn't know the extent of it because I'm not sure that headed on the kind of survey we were making. Sometimes we'd take them, sometimes we wouldn't, depending if we were concerned with people, only people who were full-time workers. We wouldn't take a few stray part-timers who worked one day a week, or what was the pattern of part-time? Was it a daily, an hourly, or was it a seasonal? And so that again was a study where you had to go and
dig
and find out from what you knew. Yeah, I started down that. It was my one of my babies, and it wasn't too bad, but and you found there were problems with part-time. I think we did, I think Opal couldn't find, he wrote that. I worked on some of the preliminary things. And
because most of the other studies would be designed like someone like Mary Elizabeth Day, and then...
And she didn't work on schedules. She did the follow-up. She might do preliminary research, but she rarely worked on the schedules. The field people in the statistical division, after all, they wanted you to get something they could tabulate or that they could handle, so they didn't just want you going far afield on material that couldn't be handled at all. So
you
worked very closely.
They
worked with you, yeah. You worked together on how could you get material that the statistical division could use.
So for each study, the field workers basically devised their own schedule.
Only, and you see, with the Women's Bureau, so many of the studies were never made again. They were pilot studies the first time, and that was it.
What was the background of some of the other field workers? Was it similar to your own?
Well, I think most of them were college graduates. Not all of them, but the Sanderson, you know, having an industrial background, I wanted to bring on some girls who had just factory experience or shop experience. They may have had high school. So there were two or three, and one of them was one of my best friends until she died. It was a little difficult for her to write reports, but I remember after I got to know her, I used to sit at night and help her write her reports or rewrite them. And Caroline Manning, who got to be a very good friend of mine, said, "Well, so-and-so's schedule's approved when you're in the party." I said, "Well, I never provide any information. I may just provide an occasional period. I forget to put them in my own and at least see that a sentence has a subject." Because those things were, she wasn't used to doing that sort of thing, but she was a very good field agent as far as observing things. But it was a little hard for her to get them down or to write descriptive stuff.
And, what industry did she come out of?
She came out of the shoe. Miss Anderson had been a shoe worker, and she was interested in, and she was a bright girl. And we were good friends, so she died a few years ago, but she used to say, oh, she was really, when I came in, two supervisors. One was very meticulous about, she was the one I went out with first, and she also, her family, and I still hear from her grandnieces and grandchildren.
It
but
sounds like the relationship among the women in the Bureau itself is really
was quite friendly, yes, and the other one.